Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. Streaming live on the free Odyssey app. And you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network. Brought to you by friends at Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. So I would say for the better part of this last decade on this radio show, the stadium and the team name have been two of the most frequently brought up topics because things have changed. The name change ultimately happened.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't think it was going to happen. The owner swore it was never going to happen. He told the USA Today, all caps, it's never going to happen. And then they changed the name from the Redskins ultimately to the Commanders. And the stadium continues to kind of persist. Like, we think they're going to move to RFK. But Mayor Bowser a couple weeks ago gave it a 4 out of 5 in terms of level of concern, which raised our eyebrows. Like, whoa, the mayor is now saying on a scale of 1 to 5 that it's a 4, her concern that it's going to happen.
Wouldn't she say that last week while I was away?
Yeah.
It all blends to me because there's constantly, you know, different little updates about the city council and votes and things like that. So it might have been when you were out. But yesterday, President Trump was asked about both the issues, name change and the stadium. Here's what President Trump had to say.
Well, we see what happens. I've been looking at the deal, and, you know, I don't blame them. They have to, it's a very important piece of property. It's a great piece of property, so we'll see. But if I can help them out, I will. You know, ultimately, we control that. The federal government ultimately controls it, so we'll see what happens. I saw the plans. I saw the stadium. The owner's very, very successful and a very good man. I know him a little bit. And it would be a great place for the NFL to be there, I can tell you that. So if they want to negotiate a little tough, that's okay with me.
Well, Mendelsohn did say that he thinks the majority of the council members do want to finally approve it. They've been saying this for weeks, if not months. They just need a little bit more information. But I don't know if that deal is going to get passed by the 15th.
Look, I think Trump was just throwing out generalities. I don't think they own the federal land anymore, right? Wasn't that the big deal that the city got it back? That was one of the big steps in the last couple of years.
It's over my head.
The city got control of the land.
I thought so, but it's over my head. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. And then here's what he says about the name change, which, of course, you know, some of our listeners like Sabah are going to get all fired up. But Josh Harris, at least for now, has made it clear they're not interested in changing the name.
Commanders changed the name back to Redskins.
Well, you want me to make a controversial statement? I would. I wouldn't have changed the name, but that's there. It just doesn't have the same. It doesn't have the same ring to me. But, you know, winning can make everything sound good. So if they win, all of a sudden the Commander sounds good. But I wouldn't have changed in there.
I mean, it's just the same general blah, you know, sort of comment that most people have. I don't think that thing has set sail. It's off and running. I think it's over. We've talked about it a million times. Young people don't care. It's old people like us that are frustrated by it. But I don't think it's coming back.
I think the
Harris group really wants to bring it back.
So the land is federal land, but remember when they, and like you mentioned, JP, when they had that legislation that, I guess that was back in January, gave control to the administration for 100 years. And the bill allows for a stadium, but explicitly cannot use federal funds. But if you, the federal government can cancel the lease if they find that they're not complying with terms of the lease. So they can get it back if they cancel the lease.
But right now, the city has control.
I doubt they will. The city has control for 99 years.
Yeah.
But the federal government can, if they find DC is not complying with the terms of the lease, they can cancel the lease.
Look, I think eventually that's going to sort itself out. And you know, we just have to be sort of on the sideline there and just kind of wait it out. Mm-hmm. What I am curious about is what we've talked about.
Let me just interject. Yeah. What we talked about last week was the timeline, though, because some of these people, and it seems so far away to me, some of these people are concerned about all of these dates that keep being moved down the line, that it's going to jeopardize the stadium being ready by 2030, mm-hmm. which is the goal. Josh Harris wants them there by 2030. There's a World Cup in 2031. They want to host that. Mm-hmm. And if they keep kind of kicking the can down the road, that's in jeopardy. And you never know, Maryland could get back in the mix.
I find that unlikely, but it's possible. I suppose it's possible. I think eventually they're going to figure it out. Whether or not it'll be in time for the World Cup and all that, I have no idea. I think eventually they're
going to figure it out. Well, we went through this last week when we talked about the timeline between now and 2030. I mean, it's obviously 5 years. And JP threw out there, you can build a stadium in two years, maybe 3 years. Well, yes, you can. And that's probably how long it would take. But there's so much crap you got to deal with in paperwork. And it would take months, if not years, to deal with it. So the five-year window is probably, and look, probably gives them a cushion to get it all done. Once they finally start digging and building it, it'll only take 2.5-3 years. But that's why they're saying a 5-year window is what we need to get everything solidified and approved.
I just brought that up because it's amazing when you look back at the history of what is now Northwest Stadium.
Yeah.
Jack Kent Cooke said, we're going to build this stadium. Once they got the land, it was up and running with people inside it at games in less than 18 months.
Right. They can build the stadium. It doesn't take 5 years to build. It's just all the red tape and everything.
Yeah.
Well, all the hoops you have to jump
through. The Washington Post reported, they only have 4 yeses so far, and they need 7 out of the 12. They only have 4 firm yeses, 3 undecided, and 5 no's right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to get all the undecideds, Mendelsohn and Louis George and a couple more, to vote yes, or they're going to have to keep hammering this out.
I think they'll get the undecideds.
Why do you think that?
I just think they will.
Well, if Mendelsohn is one of the undecided, he said he thinks the majority of council wants to get to yes. So that's obviously one of him.
I think they're going to get there.
That's him.
I don't think it's going to go back to Maryland. I think they'll figure this out.
Yeah, I mean, I would bet that too, but I don't know about this deadline. I don't know how long it would take after July 15th.
I think at the end of the day, the undecideds will cave.
But I don't think Trump's statements on the team name move the needle there at all.
Nope.
And the general comments he had about the stadium, I don't think he's really moving the ball there either. I think he's just answering questions as best as he can.
So if they don't get the deal done by the 15th, I wonder if they'll just kind of push it down the road. All right, we just missed the deadline. Or if they'll set another deadline for the 31st.
It's the end of July, the 29th or 30th,
okay.
I believe.
So they will. So they'll push it down a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Once we get into the fall and if it goes into next year, okay, then there's issues.
My guess is the no's you're never going to get, but eventually you could convince the undecided.
They need 7 of 12, correct?
Yeah.
And they've got 4 of 12 right now?
Yeah. And 3 undecideds and probably 5 firm no's. I don't know. The thing I'm more interested in is the McLaurin deal. I know we touched on it yesterday.
And you more nervous today? Another day passed.
I'm not actually more nervous. Actually, I probably would say I'm a little bit less nervous about it. Having read this report, this may have been out yesterday, but I see it came out later in the evening. But Adam Schefter, I guess, touched on it. And he says, there's no update, and that's the problem. He said on Pat McAfee's show. And he comped the deal to what DK was getting. DK's getting over $30 million a year, but Mike Evans getting 24, so there's a big gap there. It's kind of like two kind of comparable guys. Really, here's the quote, there really is quite a difference and a gap between what both sides would want. They haven't made any progress, but he said he cannot envision the Commanders moving on, and he compared it to the issue with T.J. Watt in situation in Pittsburgh, where both sides want to get a deal done, and the expectation is that both guys will get an agreement before the season. See, that's the key part, is that both sides want to get it done. Mm-hmm. It's not like the Skins are like trying to weasel their way out of this and not pay Terry McLaurin. They want to get a deal done. Oftentimes, you know, like with Kirk Cousins and the Skins, they didn't really want to get a deal done with Kirk. They didn't really want to.
They just wanted to give him the 1-year max deal,
or the
franchise deal.
They didn't really want to give him the big money. They just never
wanted
to.
Twice.
Yeah. This is a different situation. They know the fans want him. They want him. Everybody wants him. There's nobody that doesn't want Terry McLaurin here. So that's why I think eventually it's going to get worked out. But it is, as you get closer and closer to training camp, and I do probably expect him to hold out, it will get a little bit nerve-wracking.
As you get closer to camp, I can see
it
that.
It will get nerve-wracking. But I think the key part is that they do, in fact, want him. It's not like secretly Adam Peters and those guys are sitting there and they're going, we really don't want to deal with this guy. We really don't want to pay him. No, they want him here. And where there's a will, there's a way. That's what I would bet on. You disagree?
I don't disagree. I think it's going to happen. I don't understand when they compare the contracts for Mike Evans and Terry McLaurin, because Mike Evans is entering year 12.
Mm-hmm. Was he a similar age?
No, he's got to be older than Terry McLaurin.
Terry's a little older for the amount of years.
Okay,
he's been
he played longer in college, maybe. But I still maybe they're just basing it on the ages.
That's what I'm guessing.
But McLaurin's, is he in year 7?
I'm not sure.
And Evans is in year 12.
Mike Evans is 31 years old.
Okay, he's 31.
And so that's about, and so Terry's going to be 30.
So he's basically 2 years older. All right.
Yeah.
Now DK is younger.
I think he's the same age that came in, right?
He's 2 years younger.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
But he came in the same draft class as Terry. Yeah.
But I know that's, they do compare it to Mike Evans, and you got to kind of throw Mike Evans' deal out because he's played 5 years longer than Terry McLaurin.
Yeah.
But they're similar in that they're both remarkably consistent.
Yeah.
Evans has been a better touchdown guy throughout his career. I mean, you look at his career, he's been double-digit touchdowns 6 times.
Yep.
This was the first time Terry McLaurin was double-digit touchdowns, but of course he has that 1,000-yard receiving streak his entire career. Mike Evans has gone for over 1,000 yards.
Yep.
McLaurin's done pretty much the same thing.
5 straight years, yeah. 5 out of 6.
Let's just go around the room. They're going to figure out this Commander Stadium crap, and they're going to get Terry signed. They're going to go 2 for 2.
I have more confidence in the Terry signing
but what do you predict?
Than the stadium.
So what do you predict, 1 for 2?
It depends on the timeline. Like, I think that
by the opening day.
Like, will they figure out the RFK Stadium deal by September?
Yes.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes. Mm-hmm. The deadline's like the 15th, right?
And then
they're going to push it to the 30th? What do you think? They're going to push it all through August?
I feel stronger about McLaurin's deal getting done, but I believe ultimately
they're
going to
go 2 for 2. They're going to go 2 for 2. JP says 1 for 2. Jason agrees with me, 2 for 2. Drabby?
I would think the Terry thing gets done, but it's going to be a holdout, and it's going to affect the start of the season. He's going to get off to a slow start, and the chemistry is going to be a little bit off. I could see that happen. I just don't see a quick end to this in the next 10 days like you guys have been saying all summer.
I'm at the point where I think there will be a holdout.
Well, then that's, we're definitely changing.
I think there'll be a holdout, but I think
it'll get figured out.
Well,
we got until July 24th, no problem, or whatever.
This would be a disaster if it extends into the middle of camp and then he finally signs, let's just say, August 12th.
Yeah, if he signs like a week before,
and then he pulls a hammy or a groin, he's out for 6 weeks. That would be a freaking disaster.
Right.
And you know Peters doesn't want to deal with that. He knows the risks. He knows it.
I also think Terry is professional enough. He's not going to let himself get to that point.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to come in here all fat.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying he's going to be fat, but guys in shape, they tear groins and hamstrings all the time.
Yeah.
But I think it'll get done.
It tends to be something with when you're not putting in the same amount of work.
Well, I don't think he'll be putting in the same work as if he was in camp. You can only do so much.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up next, we're going to get back to the Washington Nationals, who, of course, have a new manager in Miguel Cairo, new guy running the show as their GM in DiBartolo. We'll talk to Sean Casey, former Major League Baseball player, now an analyst on the MLB Network, about the future of the Nats next here on the Junkies. Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. Remember, you miss any part of the show, you can always grab the podcast. You can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Just use the word Sports Junkies to grab the podcast. All right, join us right now on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude is the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. It's Sean Casey from the MLB Network. What's up, Sean?
Sean, what's up, buddy?
What's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
Hey, Sean, real quick before we get into the Nat stuff. So I've got a good friend who pitched for JMU. His name is Jeff Hafer. Jeff Hafer. I don't know if you remember that name.
I do remember Jeff.
He's a good friend of mine, and his daughter and my daughter played softball together. Anyway, he texted me. He goes, "You guys are having Sean on?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "He's the best hitter I ever played against." He said, when he was a freshman at Richmond and we played in the conference tournament, he had 8 consecutive hits against us.
So, why didn't they walk him?
So, yeah, why didn't they intentionally walk you? What are they doing throwing to you?
I know, man. We had some good battles with JMU. Those guys were good. Those were fun years, man. Thanks for bringing me back to that. I love that.
Good stuff.
Well, what was your best moment in college?
You know what? My best moment in college was probably going to the we went to regionals my junior year, and just being with those guys when it got announced on ESPN, you know, that whole thing, we're sitting there, nobody knows, and it pops on, and I remember they introduced Richmond. They said, you know, Jacksonville is going to – we were in the Clemson regional, and they're like, Jacksonville is going to take on the team with the nation's leading hitter, Sean Casey, Richmond Spiders. And it was like such an elation with all the guys, and we jumped in the – you know, there's a lake at University of Richmond. We all jumped in the lake. Like, just that moment with those guys was probably, when I look back, one of my favorite moments ever.
Oh, yeah, you can't beat that for sure.
Well, Nats fans aren't jumping in any lakes. They're not real happy with going on. Just give us your initial thoughts when you heard that Davey and Riz, and we have a good relationship with Mike Rizzo. We would have him on the show every Wednesday for the last three or four years. Really good relationship
Longer
with him.
Longer than that.
Longer than that, yeah. So your thoughts when you heard that?
Well, you know what? I was shocked. I really was, especially Riz. I wasn't totally shocked about Davey, but I feel like Davey and Riz were kind of a package deal. But I was very shocked that I just feel like Riz is one of the best in the business, and he has such a mind for, you know, they've won a championship under him. The Soto trade that was really starting to come to fruition with James Wood becoming a superstar in this game, going to be one of the best players for the next 10 to 15 years probably. C.J. Abrams, the way he's played, McKenzie Gore going to the All-Star game, all three of those guys could go to the All-Star game. You know, you're about to get the first pick of the draft, and if you take Cade Anderson, you probably have a big league ready pitcher out of LSU ready to go. It's like so many things look like when they ask, oh man, they're so close to getting where they need to be, and then to drop the bomb of getting rid of Rizzo and Davey I was really shocked. I was on air on MLB Network the other night when it happened. I was I think everybody was like, wow, like especially Riz,
right?
Especially Riz. I thought Davey. I listen, in this industry sometimes, I mean, you don't want to lose the locker room or the players. I just thought Davey's comments a few weeks back on, you know, the coaches, you know, it's not the coaches, it's the players. I know if I was a player, I'd be like, really? That were, I kind of feel a little, you know, weird about that. So you could maybe understand that they haven't won and you're looking at the manager to maybe go, you know, and, you know, I could understand maybe Dave, but Riz was baffling to me.
Yeah, I think all of us were a little bit surprised, but I, like you say, I do think that Davey and Riz kind of became attached at some point. The one thing that people criticize Mike for, because everybody knows this guy's a baseball lifer, he knows the game as well as anybody. The draft picks and the farm system, I guess maybe hadn't played out as well as expected, and other teams have done better. Your experience coming up, like being drafted and all of that, how difficult is it to identify talent? Like, what's going on there? Why do you think that Mike and his group seem to struggle there in that one aspect? They would do so well in trades and maybe do well in some maybe free agent signings, but the draft was something that, you know, of course they had Bryce and Strauss and they have some hits, but on the whole, it wasn't maybe quite as good as people expected.
Yeah, that's it. That's interesting because baseball is one of those sports. It's not like – it's really not like the NBA or football where you've had – you've seen, some of these guys, you see exactly what they do in college, Division I college football, basketball. You're like, okay, that's going to translate to the NBA. You know, baseball is one of the toughest sports out there as far as, you know, as you, you know, move up. You know, are the skills that we're looking at going to translate for you to be an elite big league player? Mm. You know, and I think even look at it with Dylan Cruz. I mean, Dylan Cruz, at, you know, we look at him at LSU, he's hitting over 400. Everyone's is so enamored with SEC baseball and all that stuff. But it isn't pro ball. It isn't the big leagues. It's, you know, these guys, when you think about, you know, the big league guys, you know, these guys are the one percenters. You know, what, 95% of guys that get drafted don't play a day in the big leagues. 5%, you know, 5% make it. 17% of those 5% play 10 years or more. So the numbers, when you start to get up top and you face that pitching, you know, as an evaluator and as, you know, as a, you know, as a scout, you know, it's tough to nail on so many different guys. And you're right. I mean, in Rizzo's tenure, you know, they haven't really nailed. They nailed Harper and Strasburg, but you and I could have nailed that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Those two are generational players. It's like the Pirates nailing Paul Skeens. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just not it's not as easy as a task nailing the baseball draft. And, you know, I think if there was one thing that you look back at Riz's tenure, it's that, you know, not nailing the draft and the development the way they could have.
Did you have guys when you were coming? So you're drafted in the second round, right? Did you have guys around you that you were like, oh, this is a can't-misser kid when, like, you've maybe in your first year of rookie ball, first year, whatever, and then they just never develop?
Oh, yeah, big time. You know, the first-round pick for me was a guy named David Miller who never made it. You know, I was a second-round pick. David Miller was the first-round pick, you know, out of Clemson. This guy's hit with power, hit for average, can run, but he never made it, you know? I think this is the biggest thing, guys, when you look at baseball. And as far as drafting and all that stuff goes, like, sometimes when you're in the NBA or you're in the NFL, you can out-athlete people.
Yeah.
When you get to the big leagues and you play 162 games, you mentally have to have a different gear. You mentally have to have routines that when you show up, you can deal with the failure of this game. This game punches you in the mouth every single night. Mm-hmm. And if you can't deal with it, you just get weaned out. And I've watched so many guys when I was coming up that were so much more talented than me. You know, I was, God, this guy has a run, what doesn't do this? Yeah, but when 7 o'clock hit, I was getting two or three hits, or I was, you know, 1-for-3 with a walk, or I was battling, you know, or when I was struggling, I was able to say, no, I'm going to get him tomorrow, and I'll be back at you tomorrow, and have a routine in the batter's box that showed up every single night to be consistent. I think that's the biggest difference. You're drafting guys and go, man, this guy's talented. He hits the ball out of the ballpark. He can fly, and he's got a cannon. Yeah, but guess what? Can he do it for 162? And that's the different animal here in Major League Baseball than it is any other professional sport.
Sean, one of the other things that Nats fans are frustrated with is the fact that the ownership group, since that COVID year, when you can't even count that year as a season, but that's when they dumped all the big players, you know, traded Trey Turner and Max and all those deals. But they're frustrated because the payroll has been near the bottom of the league for the last 4 years. So I think they're right around 22 or 24 this year, somewhere in there. They've got one $10 million player, and that's Nate Lowe. One. I don't believe you made the playoffs when you were with the Reds, didn't you? There was a long stretch where you didn't play in the postseason until you got Detroit. Is that correct?
Yeah, we made that with that one game playoff game in '99.
Right,
but, you know, it wasn't really a playoff game; it was just an extra game. So yeah, that was 8 years, never made the playoffs.
So did you kind of feel that as a player, where ownership, and I don't remember who the owners were of the Reds, but ownership just wasn't buying players in free agency, yeah, where they were kind of just waiting for the draft picks to flourish? Because that's what Nats fans are kind of frustrated with.
Yeah, I remember Carl Lindner. You know, so I must admit, it is frustrating as a player because, you know, Carl Lindner was a billionaire, with great guy, but you're like, man, guy's a billionaire. You can't take it with you. You know, you like to see guys spend money and let's go win some games. And I feel like if you own a Major League Baseball franchise, you owe it to the. It's different than just owning a business. You owe it to the fans. You owe it to the city. You owe it to put the best product on the field. And, yeah, I agree, man. Like, when I look back at my time, you know, we had Ken Griffey Jr. in the lineup, me, Adam Dunn, Austin Krause. We had some heavyweights. We would lead the league every year in so many offensive categories, but we never went and got pitching.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God, if you could go get us two or three pitchers,
right,
we would be winning championships here in Cincinnati. But like, oh, no, let's just try and do it on the skimp. You can't do it in Major League Baseball. You have to go get guys. So when I look at the Washington Nationals and you see these young kids coming up, it makes me think of the Chicago Cubs back in like 2014, 15, 16. You go get John Lester. You pay for Lester, the big money. You go bring in John Lackey. You know, you develop Kyle Hendricks. you know, all of a sudden you're like, wow, you know, we're loaded and ready to go because we already had the Chris Bryants and the Anthony Rizzos and the Javi Baez. I mean, you have the James Woods, you have the CJ Abrams, you know, you have a lot of these, you know, players that are coming up. But like at some point, you need to go spend some money to put some people, to put some arms around these guys, because you don't win at the big league level without arms, period.
Yeah, right.
If you don't have horses on the bump and if you don't have depth with those horses, you ain't winning.
Yeah. Real quick, the Toronto Blue Jays were 8 games back of the Yankees on May 28th. 8 games back. Now they're 3.5 up. It's been an unbelievable wow. flip, and Toronto just won their 9th game in a row last night, beating the White Sox. The Yankees have won 7 games since June 13th. I think there's like 7-15. Are the Yankees kind of a fraud?
I don't think so. I think the Yankees are in a position right now where they've had a ton of injuries, and I think their pitching has just – it's showing up now. You know, when you lose Gerrit Cole and you lose Luis Gil and you know, you're kind of leaning on Max Fried being dominant the way he has been. Carlos Rodon, you know, starting to, you know, hit a little bump in the road, and you got, you know, Warren in your rotation, Stroman, you're leaning on Marcus Stroman right now, mm-hmm. and the bullpen just hasn't been that great. I mean, Devin Williams has pretty much scuffled most of the year. They got rid of Clay Holmes for him. Weaver, Luke Weaver, since coming off the IL, has really been scuffling a little bit. So I think the bullpen has been really bad, and the rotation, you know, hasn't been great lately. And like I just said about the Nationals, if you don't pitch it in this league, especially in the AL East, you know, you're going to get thumped. And that, I think when you look at the Yankees in this last month, I think they've scored runs, they've put up runs, but they just can't stop the bleeding with runs coming across the plate.
Talking to Sean Casey, who's a 3-time All-Star when he played. He's in the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame. Now he's an MLB Network analyst. And MLB Network has extensive All-Star programming beginning this Friday. Sean's teamed up with Gorilla Glue, the official sponsor of Broken Bats. Go to GorillaTough.com to learn how, if your bat breaks, you can use Gorilla Glue to patch it back up. Did you have a favorite bat when you were a kid?
Well, you know what? When I was a kid, yeah. I mean, I just remember the Black Magics. I
don't
know,
yes.
Back in the day, the Black Magic. You know, that was my favorite bat. You know, I mean, you know, when I used it in college, I still have the one I used in high school. You know, and what's so funny now is, you know, I was part owner of Marucci for a while. Marucci Bats, who's the official bat of Major League Baseball. You know, it's so funny. You know, nowadays you go to a Little League game and everybody has a bat. You know, and they're, you know, these $400 bats. You know, back when we were playing, I think you take that Black Magic, if you punched out, you just hand it to your buddy. Mm-hmm. You go, dude, I just punched out, and everyone used the same bat. So, you know, when you look back at the bats, it's, you know, it's the bat thing's always a good thing, and it's getting the business is a lot bigger now than it was back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But Gorilla Glue can keep your bats together, I guess, if you got the wood bat.
Well, dude, you know what's incredible about the Gorilla? I just did a Gorilla Glue commercial, and everyone's always like, "Is that you on the commercial?" I'm like, "Yeah." They literally took bats that were broken and glued them back together with the Gorilla Glue. And I was at Great American Ballpark a month and a half ago shooting the commercial, which was so much fun getting back in the box and hitting a little bit. But I was hitting with a bat that Gorilla Glue had glued back together. And I was hitting baseballs with it, and it really worked. It was incredible. So, you know, when you see that commercial, know that those bats are really, really glued back together with Gorilla Glue, and it can hold a bat together even with the contact of a ball.
So I was driving around, and I heard this analyst really upset. I couldn't believe it, but maybe you would be upset too, that Clayton Kershaw is being included in the All-Star game. I guess they name him as a legend. Mm-hmm. I had no problem with it, but this analyst was like, oh, the All-Star game is supposed to be about the best players. He's only had 9 starts, whatever. What does Sean Casey think about something like that?
Are you kidding me? Every player wants to see Clayton Kershaw out there. And you know what? If you're Clayton Kershaw and you've played 18 years, got your 3,000 punch out, yeah, good for you good for Rob Manfred that they're doing that, you know, kind of legends rule, bringing this guy in. I remember back in 2001 when I was at the All-Star game in Seattle, you know, it was Cal Ripken's last All-Star game. I think they brought in Tony Gwynn, if I'm not mistaken. You know, it was kind of like, hey, Gwynn's going to be in here too. But Ripken ends up homering in that game, and you know, it was just an incredible send-off. So, Now, I mean, I think it's a great thing that Clayton Kershaw is going to be a part of this All-Star game, and it's really to honor him while he's still playing.
Yeah. By the way, real quick, Paul Skeens is unbelievable. He might win the National League Cy Young. He's probably the leader in the clubhouse. He or Zach Wheeler. But, I mean, every time he takes the bump, he gets zero run support. I mean, literally, maybe one run. I know he had a bad start when he played in Milwaukee back in late June, but for most part, he loses 1-0 or 2-1.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, that's what I mean. If you're Paul Skeens, you're like, it's just like, you know, you're talking about the ownership. I mean, with the Pirates, what are we doing? We got a guy like Paul Skeens. They had a guy like Gerrit Cole a few years back. Like, you can't waste these years of a guy that's so elite. But if Skeens goes out there, it seems like he goes out there with shutout innings the other day, 5 innings, 10 punches, and, you know, gets a – they end up losing the game, but, you know, with a shutout. But, yeah, man, that's got to be frustrating for him when you do that and you can't get any run support.
I mean, he's given up 7 earned runs, Sean, in his last 40 and two-thirds innings.
Oh, my God. Guys, there you go. There's your once-in-generational player, Paul Skeens.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Hey, Sean, appreciate the time, buddy. You're great on the network, and we love it. And hopefully we'll get you on the show sometime later in the summer. Right,
thanks
bro?
A lot, man.
Thanks. Hey, man, great interview, guys. Great questions, and best of luck to you guys, and talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you, pal.
Good stuff. Thanks, Sean.
Yep.
What a great dude. That guy was an absolute beast. How many guys could say they retired 300 hitter?
I know. Career 300 hitter, yep. He was a beast.
His last year at Richmond was absurd.
My boy at JMU said we couldn't get him out. Literally,
well,
couldn't get him out.
I bet. An absolute beast. And it is wild how it... You know, like he said, that there are guys that are faster, stronger, more power, whatever. But at the big league level, can you do it night in and night out? You have that mental wherewithal.
800-636-1067 is the number. We're the Junkies on the Fan. Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. Of course, we're streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can always grab our podcast if you've missed any part of the show. We had Tom Lavero on earlier from the Washington Times talking about the Nationals. You just heard Sean Casey. You can grab the podcast via Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just put in the term Sports Junkies and you will find us. So, Jason, I don't know if you've ever watched the CrossFit Games.
It's been a while.
There's something now called the Hydrox event, which is... pretty similar. It's a fitness competition.
Isn't that a cookie?
Hydroxes?
I thought that was like a Hydrox, like an Oreo.
I feel like that is an Oreo knockoff. I thought it was maybe an Oreo knockoff, but I can't remember. It's definitely in that genre. Right. Anyway, there's a Hydrox event in Sydney, Australia. Mm-hmm. And in the event, they have to do things like burpee jumps, rowing, throw medicine balls.
Sounds so boring.
Either have teams or it can be solo. And a clip went viral because a guy was competing with his wife, I believe. Maybe it was just a girlfriend, but a guy's competing with his girlfriend, let's say. And she faints during the event. She starts getting some medical attention, and then he goes off to keep doing the next event, which I believe was the wall ball throw.
When people are criticizing him for continuing.
And somebody captured it on video and said it was like the most horrific thing they had ever seen.
Why?
That the guy would leave his girlfriend or wife on the floor because she was also twitching.
She had already had medical attention. They were taking care of her, right?
Okay, that's your opinion. Now,
is that not a fact?
That's what the story
says.
In
the video... the guy claimed the woman's partner ran off to finish the race on his own. He said the guy's missus just fainted and full hit the deck. She's unresponsive, and he just kept doing the wall ball and then crossed the line by himself. He just left her there. He then said, I think I've just witnessed one of the worst things ever in my life. Now, the guy's girlfriend or wife, whatever she is, partner, said afterwards that the first two questions she asked her partner when she woke up was, Did you finish it for us, and what time did we get?
See, there you go. So she was fine with it.
She was, I don't know if she was butt-sized.
Sounds like she was fine with it.
Look, she might not have known what happened if you're passed out for a while.
She was receiving medical attention.
Did he initially go over to her?
There's different reports. So you got the TikToker who says it's the worst thing he's ever seen. I don't even know why he's videoing this random guy at this random race and this couple. But he captures this on video, right? Makes look good. Now, the other side, the boyfriend and the girlfriend, they're saying it was all kind of taken out of context, that he had checked in a couple times, right, and then he just went off to finish the race.
Right, which I think it's fine. There was a viral thing that I saw recently, speaking of a race, and I'm sure it's probably years old or months ago, but it came into my algorithm, is the 80-year-old 100-meter dash at the Penn Relays. Did you guys see this?
I didn't necessarily see this one. I've seen them in the past.
Amazing. Sure. There were three guys in particular out in front of all the others. Literally, Jason, you had to be 80 years or older. They're sprinting at the, I think it was the Penn Relays, mm-hmm, in the rain. And I think a guy ran 16 seconds. It looked like he was moving pretty good. And all I can think about is, I think he could beat Cakes.
I think he'd be me. 16 seconds.
I think he could probably beat me because I'd probably pull a hammy or something.
I've said it a bunch of times. My kids, Dylan and Isabella, both did track, you know, just recreationally.
Yeah.
And I'll go to these track events, and sometimes I'll see a 9-year-old girl just whizzing around. 9 years old.
Yeah, flying.
Whizzing around. I'm like, I don't think I could beat her.
Well,
and sometimes it's just unfathomable that like a 9-year-old would just crush you in a 400.
To me, it's more unfathomable for an 80-year-old to be moving the way a couple of these guys are moving.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I'm watching.
These
guys
are going to live to 100.
You talking about the 85-year-old?
I don't know how old he was. I know he was over 80. He's like a beard.
Yeah,
he's running in the rain. The one I saw, it was Penn Relays in the rain.
I saw that. I think it would be pretty close, even if you did it. It says the average 55-year-old can run a 100-meter dash in 16.5 seconds.
Listen, I don't even think I could finish. I think I would pull a hamstring or something. I'm not kidding. I don't think I could. I've done that kind of stuff before in my older years. And yeah, you pull a hamstring or your quad tightens up.
Yeah, the video I saw, the guy just smoked the rest of the field.
No. This one, there was three guys that were better than the others. And they were moving great. And that guy would, you know, he's all hairy and, you know, old with his gray hairs and his big long beard. But he was in phenomenal shape.
He was probably a stud when he was in his 20s.
You know what it reminds me of? Now, I don't think he's in his 80s quite yet, because I think he was kind of a younger dad. But I'll never forget when we were back in our softball playing days and seeing Tommy Horsecamp's dad sprinting, warming up.
Yeah.
In his 60s.
Yep.
Just like sprinting like a 30-year-old guy.
Yeah,
dude. Most guys can't do that when they get to like 50, 60, 70, 80 years old.
My knees won't let me.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Somebody reached out to me recently that I used to play basketball with. Like I used to play basketball like three times a week in my 30s. I'm 54 now. All right. He was the old guy at the gym at the time. And he connected with me recently on like Facebook Messenger. He's still hooping.
Right.
He's got to be 70 years old.
Yeah. Sometimes you see those guys. Who's the old guy that...
Now, he had a good jumper. Like, that's the one thing. Like, I'm guessing he doesn't move that much. But if you kick it to him, he can still knock it down.
Who's the old guy, like, New York that plays one-on-one? Like, George the Messiah or whatever his name is.
Plays Scalabrini and
all these guys.
He's, like, 70.
Yeah, he's butt old. Does he play, like, in Tim's? Like, wears boots?
Yeah.
Jeans?
Like, the key is you just never quit.
Yeah, I guess.
George the Messiah.
Some of those clips are hilarious, watching him still play.
Wasn't there a clip of Daryl Green running up backwards?
That was
up a
few years old, yeah, because that was with the
Will
other
Blackman.
Will Blackman, back when Blackman was here.
Yeah.
So that was like an old clip.
Okay.
But yeah, he was probably still 50 plus when he was doing that. Scooting backwards up the hill like that. Great feet.
Well, I mean, he's cut from a different cloth. He's just
genetically blessed. Why isn't Daryl Green running these old man races?
He should. What do you think Carroll Dale Green would run in the 100 today? How old is Daryl? Daryl was in studio about a year ago with us.
Probably
what do you think, Daryl? 65
mid-60s
or something?
Mid-60s, maybe?
Why do I feel like Daryl could run like under 12?
Because he probably could.
He's 65.
he probably could, right?
Yeah. You see these clips sometimes of, you know, Dr. J still dunking. Now he's 6'8 or so.
Yeah.
He's still got to be able to get up.
All that stuff, like with running and jumping, it's just so gone. It's gone.
Yeah.
It's not a thing anymore. I even go, you know, shoot baskets at the gym last night while my daughters are getting reps with volleyball. And it's just like, where did my jumper go? What happened? What happened?
I did some laps in the pool recently, and then they have like a little basket, you know, right at the pool. So I shot a few jumpers from the water, okay, in the pool. I got out, and I thought that this guy was going to jone on me for my terrible like freestyle technique. He joned on my jumper. It was a dagger to the heart. So I'm just fooling around.
What did he say? Why is he watching you?
I don't know. He just took a little pot shot. It's fine.
It did hurt you, though. It did hurt you. Hurt the ego
it made me feel like I should have been actually working on my game.
Should have been more locked in.
Yes.
Right.
Just threw up like 10 awful shots.
All right, we come back. You want to get back into the whole Rizzo deal?
Yeah, we talked about it earlier.
We haven't really heard from people today.
So Miguel Cairo is now the manager, and DiBartolo is the general manager, or the analytics guy.
You like the idea that DiBartolo is more of an analytics guy. He's going to lean more into the numbers and have a completely sort of different thought process going into this than Rizzo's kind of combined, blended, old-school approach.
By the way, for me and Cakes to win are over 70.5, they'd have to go 34-38 the rest of the way. So they'd have to go 4 games under .500. There are 17 games under 500 now,
it's
I think.
Very 17. Unlikely.
16. I'm turning around. You better hit Cairo and push the magic buttons.
Well, that ain't happening.
Yeah. Plus, they're going to sell off their players.
Yeah. There's no way they're going to go 4 games under .500 in the next 72.
All right, coming up next, let's get into that. Do you trust the rebuild with the new guys in charge? 800-636-1067. We want to hear from Nats fans. Do you like the direction of where the Nationals are going?